let's get started this morning. Of all the biblical truths that I get to preach on, there are a few that I enjoy preaching on more than biblical generosity. As I said in the hook, just consider yourself prepared to be waterboarded. I am just going to bring it because I love this topic. I think it is just an incredible reflection of who we're called to be. We have spent the summer giving ourselves away as a church and missions and outreach and countless opportunities to stand in the gap for the hurting and marginalized in our community. It has been a living testimony of sacrifice this summer that you all have exhibited, and we're excited about that. Last January, I was in a meeting of clergy, about 25, 30 clergy persons in the room, and the discussion came around to the new tax law that they believed would dramatically impact the need for and the benefits from tax-deductible charitable giving, right? Literally, you would have thought the sky was falling. I have never heard so much collective fear-mongering and negativity around a single issue in a long, long time. And it was like, woe is me on steroids. And they just were feeding off of each other. And before very long, people were anticipating that giving would automatically go down, that they begin to have fearful moments of who they were going to have to fire. Some of them begin to list the people that they were going to have to let go in their churches and off their staff. And they begin to talk about missions that would no longer happen and the things that they supported that would go away. It was crazy. For about a half an hour, it was just nuts. It was the kingdom sky was literally falling. So you know me. I sat there quietly for a few minutes. So when there was a pause in their despair, I began to speak. I said, when did we start living by sight and not by faith? What happened to the belief that God owns the cattle on a thousand hills? I said, make no mistake about it. Tax deductions have always been the horizontal American blessings for a vertical act of biblical obedience. The Christian in Thailand didn't get up this morning fretting over tax benefits of charitable giving. He got up worried this morning that his neighbor was going to go to hell. I said, I don't know how it is at your churches, but at Georgiana, our relationship is with a holy God who gave it all for us. Our spiritual relationship is not with the IRS. We will always render under Caesar's what is Caesar's, but make no mistake about it, we think the rest belongs to God. In fact, Caesar's portion belongs to God too. Caesar just doesn't know that, right? Finally, I said, if my people quit giving because they've lost their tax benefit, then they should fire me immediately because I've done a horrible job of teaching biblical truth on what it means to give. It's a good thing that ministry isn't a popularity contest because I would be losing. They hate me. They don't like for me to go to these meetings. They don't invite me back anymore. So, listen, Dee Dee and I have always lived with a Malachi 3:10 approach to life. God says, when you are faithful with the tithe, see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be enough room to store it. We have experienced this way of biblical living. We have always believed that we have been blessed to be a blessing. You see, I believe there's a direct correlation between our capacity to love and being generous. After all, God's love is a generous love. He loves without end. He loves without limit. He loves when we don't deserve it. He loves before we respond. In fact, his love can't be earned. And for sure, we've done absolutely nothing to deserve this kind of love. This divine love goes before us. It surrounds us. And it's a never-ending stream, Scripture tells us. God is love. And his love is generous. I believe that generosity is one of the attributes that all of God's children should have. In fact, I would go as far as to say is that generosity is the evidence of God's love in your life. Generosity should be the natural byproduct of an amazing grace that has been bestowed upon us. The problem is generosity has often been easily open to interpretation. Oftentimes, what we think is generosity is sometimes nothing more than the leftover scraps of our abundance. Nothing more than the leftover scraps of our abundance. And part of the problem is, as Americans, we don't define abundance very well either. It's funny to me how no one thinks they're very rich. Even the very rich don't think they're very rich. But everybody thinks they're super generous. How is that even possible? Nobody thinks they're rich, but everybody thinks they're generous. Generosity is one of those words that just trends towards personal interpretation. There's no real grading system for generosity, if we're honest about that. It's a lot like junior high gym class, right? There's no real grading process for junior high gym class. You show up dressed out in a breathing body, it's a pretty good chance you're passing junior high gym class, right? You know, you don't have to meet any obstacles, climb a rope. Back in my day, there were things you had to do. Now you just have to show up dressed out, be willing to walk the track. There's no grading system for junior high gym class. In the same way, if you have ever given a dollar to a homeless person, directions to a tourist from New York, or smiled at a stranger, you might be very well sitting here this morning confused as to why we're even having to preach on this. Like, what's the big deal, Pastor? Right? The thing is we live in a world that reinforces the fear of scarcity, the anxiety-producing possibility that we'll never have enough. But God calls us to surrender our fear by trusting in his provision. I've always believed that there's a critical correlation between fear and the absence of generosity. Thomas Aquinas, the theologian of the Middle Ages, said fear causes a contraction of the soul. He compared its effect to a person living in a city under siege. He said, when an army attacked a city, the inhabitants of the countryside, they all flocked to inside the city walls, inside the city gates. They brought their pigs and their goats and their donkeys and their animals and their food, and they all just came into the city. From this contracted, inward-focused position, they would hunker down and hope their food and water could outlast the attacking army's willingness to fight. So it's just a city under siege. Similarly, when we are afraid, we contract, we pull back, we withdraw, we grip our resources tighter and tighter and tighter and assume a posture of protection and self-preservation. In these moments, we can only think about ourselves, our needs for survival. From this defensive position, it's almost impossible to love because you cannot give. You're gripped by the fear of scarcity. The thing is our enemy loves siege warfare. Our enemy loves siege warfare, and you can't outlast him. He never goes away. It's why Jesus said that the kingdom of God should be forcefully advancing, and I believe love is the tip of the spear. I want us to be repelling darkness. I want us to be shining with love. I want us to be on the spiritual offensive all the time. I believe love always produces something. It's something tangible, fruit-bearing. Love, when poured out liberally, is the fertilizer that makes everything grow. It paves the road of hope. This kind of generous love is true in our marriages. It's true in your families and in your relationships. It's true vocationally. Love always leaves something in its place. And the same is true for generosity. Generosity always leaves something in its place. And here's the key. The enemy doesn't have a defense for this kind of selfless and unconditional love. The world can't explain it, and the devil can't stop it, this generous love. The cool thing about the economy of God is that when his love is distributed generously, not only does it flow freely, but God is also the God of the resupply. Not only does he replace what has been distributed, he often gives you a little bit more. When we give sacrificially, we're putting ourselves in jeopardy by the world's perspective. But in God's eyes, this is not reckless. He sees it as an issue of who and what we've put our trust in. It's an issue of faith. This is why God tells us, to whom much is given, much is expected. I feel this divine pressure all the time that God expects a great deal of us because we have been given so much, both collectively as a church and individually. As I've been saying all summer, God intends for us to what? Shine everywhere we go. Go to 1 Timothy. Paul writes the young protege, the young pastor, with some advice. 1 Timothy 17. I love how this passage starts. It's the end of this letter. And the opening word is command. What Paul doesn't say to Timothy is, listen, you should suggest to your people, or if it comes up in conversation, you should mention to them, or if you should just kind of be talking around the campfire one night and you have an opportunity to work this in, you should do that. No, Paul starts with the word command. command those who are rich in the present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so they may take hold of the life that is truly life. What Paul's trying to tell Timothy is, listen, the life that's worth living is a life worth sharing. It's literally giving yourself away. Here's the deal. I think most Christians know this this 1 Timothy passage intellectually, but we kind of live like it's a lie. We live like God is not watching. We live like generosity is open to self-interpretation, or worse than that, we live as if generosity is optional. For most people, generosity does not come naturally. It's why an unbelieving world does not get why you put money in a basket 20 minutes ago. They don't understand that. It makes no sense to them. Why would you do that? Think about it. When we were children, we fiercely protected our toys, right? Everything was mine, 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 mine. Some of you own those children right now. That's the only word they know. I was here for VBS. I know whose children you are. So as teenagers, we become more interested in fairness than benevolence. Everything's about fairness when you're a teenager. Then we graduate to a phase in our life where the focus is on getting our due. We're getting what we're owed, right? Young adult, I want to get what I'm owed, right? And then we reach full adulthood to find that we are weighed down by every financial worry and anxiety imaginable. This pattern of existence makes it very hard to be open-handed with what we have. But like all things biblical, God calls us to a different way of life, a different way of understanding our stuff. I believe if we will open our heart to generosity, we will be amazed at how God will fill it. If we will open our heart to generosity, soon we'll be able to open our hands to give it away. I want to share a statement from Paul in 2 Corinthians. The New Living Translation says it this way. In chapter 8, Paul says, "Now I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters, what God in his kindness has done through the churches in Macedonia." So part of what he's trying to explain is the churches in Macedonia were all Gentile churches. They were all Greek churches who were taking an offering for the Jewish Christians at the home church in Jerusalem. The Macedonian Christians were never going to Jerusalem. They had never been to Jerusalem. They weren't going to see Jerusalem. They didn't know anybody who lived in Jerusalem, yet they felt this sense of responsibility to make a gift to the starving church in Jerusalem. He goes on to say, "This church in Macedonia is being tested by many troubles, and they are very poor, but they are also filled with abundant joy, which is overflowed in rich generosity. For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more. And they did it of their own free will. They begged us again and again for the privilege and sharing in the gift for the believers in Jerusalem. They did even more than we had hoped, for their first action was to give themselves to the Lord and then to us, just as God wanted them to do." I love this passage because I think it is the model for biblical living and generous giving. When was the last time you got on your knees and you begged God for an opportunity to give your stuff away? When was the last time that you laid face down like I do every year at the Compassion Offering and pray that morning that we as a church would just give to those 20 girls? When was the last time that we went before God and begged him, as the Macedonia church did, to please, please, please let us make a gift? When was the last time our abundant joy spilled over into generosity for someone else? And then this passage said they gave what they had and then some. It's the "and then some" that makes and defines generosity. Why would we give one uniform shirt to a child at Cambridge when we could give two? Why would you give one that has to be worn every day when you could give two? I can tell you that Dee Dee and I calculated how many children we wanted to bless, and then we wrote a check to buy that many shirts. We didn't start with how much did we want to give. We started with how many kids did we want to bless, and then that determined what we gave, because it's not a matter of what's in our wallet, it's a matter of what's in our hearts, right? When I became senior pastor some 16 years ago, I began to wonder what it might look like to be a part of a church who understood the reason that we exist is to give ourselves away. What would it look like to be a church that would be open to opening the floodgates of tangible love? Could we trust that God could and would do more than we could ever imagine? Did we understand that we do not have the capacity to hold all that God wants to give us, so that he's constantly, constantly making deposits of love and generosity into our life as we distribute them? Could we create a church that understood and believed in the divine distribution of God's goodness? That we were in the divine distribution business, the generous distribution of our love and our time and our resources? I begin to wonder, could there be a church like that? And the answer to that is yes, because you are that church. You have become that church. The key is to never be satisfied by what we just did, but to be constantly looking for the next opportunity to give yourself away. This is generosity. It's looking for the next spot to make a deposit in a broken and hurting world. The shameful truth is you and I live in a world more interested in hanging on than giving away. The world believes in situational generosity, which is just a feeling of generosity, but not really a way of life. It's circumstantial. At Georgiana, we have never bought into situational generosity, something that would happen occasionally. Situational generosity is influenced by convenience and is concerned only with the cost. We believe in ceaseless generosity. Ceaseless generosity. That we would do for one what we wish we could do for everyone instead of doing for none because we could do only for one. Right? We see the whole world as a possible recipient of tangible love. We call this ripple effect. Our giving around here is intended to be viral, contagious, intentional, and influential in the name of Jesus Christ, who climbed on the cross and gave it all for us. As I work with other churches, I find there are two types of giving. I give to get something, and I give to leave something. We have only one rule as it pertains to communion tithe around here. We give it away so that it would be unconditional, so there would be literally nothing that we could get in return, not a quid pro quo, not a scratch my back because I scratched your back. We're not looking for a bounce back. We're not looking for any of those things. We choose communion offerings so that they can be unconditionally given. We give them and we don't look back. We don't give them with strings. We don't say, here, we're going to give you a gift, but you can only use it for this. We give it to the ministry and we let them go to work. We give unconditionally because that's how God's grace came to us. Didn't come with strings attached. Didn't come with stipulations. He just gave it to us. We're blessed to be a blessing, and so we bless. End of story. It's not more complicated than that. Secondly, I find that people approach generosity as an either-or situation. Either I will give my time or my money, but rarely both. This is simply not in this book. It's not in the book. I'll give my time or my money, but you're not getting both of them, right? We exist to give ourselves away, all of ourselves. Have you ever wondered why missions is so important to us in this church? Have you ever thought, why is it that they're always going, they're always doing, whether it's Belize or Kenya or Haiti or Kentucky? We had the missionaries from Kenya here with us this past week. They stayed in the parsonage. They were on furlough. We helped them enjoy a week of rest. Have you ever wondered why we're at House of Hope and at Cambridge? Well, here's what I believe. Until you see and know the plight of the needy, until you see and know the plight of the needy, you'll never give to them. But once you see it, you can't stop. Once you know the plight of the needy and you see it, you can't stop. Anybody who has been to see our girls in Haiti, we just had a group there, knows firsthand what the drive from the airport to our orphanage looks like. And once you see the plight of the needy, you know what the easiest check those people write? Is that compassion offering check every year. It's just the easiest because you know the plight of the needy. In the Bible, Jesus warns us not to lay up treasure on earth. He understood completely what we have such a hard time accepting, that one day moth and rust would get everything we own and Uncle Sam gets the rest. No matter what your income is, you're either moving away from your earthly treasures or towards it. Every heartbeat brings us one moment closer to eternity. Trust me, if your treasure is in heaven, then you're constantly moving forward towards that with every thought about leaving deposits of love as you make your way. I read a story just this past week that Stephen King shared with some college students about wealth. He said, I found out exactly what it means when you say you can't take it with you. He said, after an accident, he found himself lying in a ditch along a country road covered in blood and mud, and his tibia was poking out of his jeans like a tree branch snapped off in a thunderstorm. He said, I had a MasterCard in my wallet that had an endless credit limit on it. He said, I had all the money in the world at my disposal in my wallet. He says, but when you're lying in a ditch covered in mud and blood and broken glass in your hair, you soon realize that nobody accepts MasterCard where you're at, right? He said, we all come to this world naked and broke, and we may be dressed on the way out, but we are equally as broke. He said, Warren Buffett is going out broke. Bill and Melinda Gates going out broke. Tom Hanks going out broke. Stephen King broke. Not a crying dime among any of us when we leave this world. The reality is when someone declares your time of death, it's not going to matter whether that was done on a Timex or a Rolex. You are dead, right? And any opportunity for influence, any opportunity to give yourself away is gone, gone, gone. Timex, Rolex, it ain't going to matter because you're going to be gone. The Bible tells us that our life is a lifelong opportunity to give ourselves away. Everything we have literally will pass through our hands at one time or another, either through our life or at the end of our life. I believe every intentional and spontaneous act of generosity gives others hope as they're on the cusp of abandoning hope. What I've witnessed around here in this church is that we hold God's gifts with an open hand rather than clenched fists. Let me share two stories. I could share hundreds of stories. It was hard. This is one of those sermons I could preach for hours and hours and hours, but I'm going to share two stories that are true. Unlike Nathan, all my stories are true. And so last week, we bought lunch for a number of schools in our community. Just as the faculty returns, we're in the process of doing that. We've done that with a couple of folks. Stacy, our finance pastor, went to make payment at a restaurant. She called to set up payment at this restaurant and got a young girl who was confused as to why the church was paying the school's lunch bill, and she couldn't handle that, so she passed it on to the owners. And so Stacy finally got a hold of the owners and began to explain our heart and our reason behind buying the faculty lunch and supporting our local schools. And the owner said to her, hey, we're church people, and we've never done anything like that in our church, right? And I said to her, I'm always surprised when generosity is a surprise to kingdom people. Why are kingdom people surprised when generosity is a surprise? Shouldn't we be doing it already, right? I mean, it's confusing me. Secondly, a couple of months ago, Dee Dee and I were out to dinner, and we saw somebody from our church. It happens sometimes. It doesn't happen all the time, so I don't want you to feel bad. It happens sometimes. We saw somebody from our church, and we just bought them dinner. It was just one of those things. We anonymously paid for dinner. We didn't say anything to them on the way out. No fuss, no fanfare. Paid for it and went home. We did this because frequently this happens to us. We went through a season of time where we could not buy dinner at Carrabba's to save our life. It was the craziest thing. And so we were trying to ripple it out, and we don't always know who did it. Somebody saw us, and they blessed us, and we try to do that. It's always a surprise. When it happens, it's always a joy when it happens. Sometimes people leave me gifts on the pulpit while I'm out of the room, and they're all unsigned. Like I got a rhino, stuffed rhino, 3 weeks ago. Don't know where it came from on the pulpit, right? It's in my office. I used it to entertain an infant the other day. It's perfect. So whoever did that, thank you for that. Appreciate that. So this particular night, we did this, and can I tell you just a side note? When you do this, be a big tipper, all right? All right, nothing says, I'm doing this for Jesus, and then you shortchange the waitress. That does not work. Be a big tipper. Do not penalize the wait staff for your generosity. It defeats the purpose of what you're doing. Well, apparently, we blessed this couple who decided to randomly just bless another couple in the restaurant. And so it goes, and it repeats itself 8 times over a 2-hour period of time. And the wait staff is, they're just like, oh my God, do you see what's happening? This is incredible. And did you see that tip I got? They're comparing tips. And it's just like, it's just incredible, right? Ask me how I know this happened. Thank you for asking. The last recipient was a pastor from another church in our community. Only God could do that, right? Brother, I'm not going to send you a letter. I'm going to send you an object lesson. So here's the deal. He called me the next day to tell me the story. He said, it was just incredible. He says, I'm ashamed to admit it. I've never thought to do that. But he says, you should have seen, the restaurant was a buzz by the time it got to my table. He says, all we knew was that some really big guy from Georgiana had gotten the thing rolling, right? Why is it that they knew it was me? I don't know what it is. Now, come on, how much fun is that? That's a good time, right? Right? It's just, you know, it's just an opportunity. Listen, every week I go to Cambridge, I bring Maureen, my third grade teacher that I work with, I bring her coffee. Because Dee Dee taught me you never show up at a teacher's classroom without a cup of coffee in your hand to give away. It's a universal rule, apparently. So when I go through Starbucks to get her coffee, because I'm not getting her cheap coffee, I'm getting her good coffee, right? So if you take something good. So there for a while, I was buying the coffee of the person behind me. I mean, if the coffee's $4, I'll buy the $4 behind me. You know, and so can I just tell you a funny story? So one day I decided to do this, a car full of teenagers. They bought breakfast and everything. It was like $40. It was like, So I'm doing this one day, and I look behind me, and there's some 20-something in the car, and it hits me. What if she thinks I'm a creeper? Right? She's like some sort of crazy stalker guy, right? You know? And then, so now I'm having to explain every time I go through to the cashier, listen, this is a Jesus thing. I'm not a creeper. I'm not, like, trying. I'm not gonna circle back around and wave at her. You know, you want to be generous, but you don't want to be a creeper, all right? That's all I'm saying, right? All right, so this is just my life. Generosity has always been a way of life at our house. We literally know what it means to have had plenty, and we have known what it means to have very, very little. But because it's a heart issue and not a wallet issue, it's never affected our giving. Generosity is an act of intentionality in our home, and we want to give and serve. I never want to ask you to do something that I'm not already doing or haven't done. I don't want to invite you to go to a place that I've never been, because I think that's what it means to be a pastor. Can I brag on my wife for a minute? I know Nathan likes to throw Daisy into the bus, and I would never frivolously use Dee Dee in a sermon story just to get a laugh. I would never do that. I'm too mature for that. Seriously, let me just share. Dee Dee is not the typical pastor's wife. I don't know what that looks like, but she ain't it. Some of you never see her. She has her own service. She comes to the last service. She sits over in this area with her friends. She never sits up front with me, no matter how much I beg and plead. She sits back there with her friends. New member workshops, people are constantly asking me, I hear you talk about your wife. Does she come to church? I mean, we don't see her. We don't know who she is. Last Sunday, somebody thought Janice was my, two Sundays ago, thought Janice was my wife, and, you know, what a super compliment for me, not so good for Janice. I mean, so Dee Dee just flies under the radar. So Dee Dee has quietly spent her summer, like so many of you have done, serving her church. When she finishes her full-time job of teaching five-year-olds, she immediately went to youth camp to serve as camp mom. And she obnoxiously wakes up kids every morning with some stupid song she sings that parents are now asking for recordings of, because while it is not necessarily a joyful noise, it is effective in waking up teenagers. So it just seems to work. She then probably joined me to herd 30 sheep for 12 days in Greece and Turkey, helping me count heads 15 times a day, collecting tips for drivers and guides, reminding me when I'm getting a little crispy on the edges and going, hey, tell your face you're having a good time, you know. And so 12,000 steps a day, she was with me for every single one of those, supporting me, supporting us. Just a couple of weeks ago, she led a mission trip to Kentucky with Denny Cheshire and managed to get all 17 of them home 24 hours after they left Salyersville through one weather delay after another weather delay after another weather, and a sleepover in Newark, because that's where everybody wants to sleep over, is in Newark, right? The whole while, Chris Rodriguez and I are on the phone having to set up rooming lists for the hotel so that we can maintain safe sanctuaries, because we have 7 or 8 teenagers that are not with their parents, and we've got to make sure that, you know, Anyway. And last weekend, she gave up 5 days to follow her husband to Virginia to perform a wedding, because nobody gets married in the church anymore, right? They all... They all get married far away, right? And so the Habers were gracious. It was a beautiful, beautiful wedding. But Dee Dee came along because it's 5 days for me to be by myself. I hate to be by myself. So she simply inspires me. She inspires me. Because her job through the rest of the year is, it's a hard job. 35 years of having five-year-olds ask you the same question all day long. And then the first moment she gets, she steps up and serves her church. Like you do. She inspires me. I want to be like her. Then on top of that, she lives inside my Mach 3 schedule, where we're at fundraisers and benevolent events as I represent the Georgiana brand in our community. She just goes. She just gives. She's not looking for a prize. She's not looking for a trophy because she understands this is what life is like. Let me close with this. I want to model generosity for my children. I want to model it for the leadership and the staff of our church. In 2 weeks, I'll spend two back-to-back Saturdays in August teaching the principles of generosity to Methodist churches at a district training event. Jesus led by example, and I believe that we are called to lead by example. Listen, at our house, we give and serve because we believe God gave everything for us and has called us to be in the game and not be observers from the sidelines. I wanted my children to grow up knowing that life is not about them, but it's about what we leave as we move through life. We want to be remembered as givers and not takers. I love our church. Examples of generosity and love abound everywhere in this church. I love that people aren't waiting for permission or invitations to be generous. We have become a culture of generosity around here. We understand that we exist to give ourselves away. You know what I've never heard in 20 years of ministry? I've never had a pastor come to me and say, Corky, can you just quit telling people to volunteer? We have too many volunteers. So nobody's said, Kelly's never come and said, hey, we have too many volunteers in children's ministry. Can you dial it back a little bit? I mean, we have need right now in children's ministry for volunteers. It's never, ever happened where I've had to do that. Priorities are funny things, aren't they? We know they're important, and we want to keep them in balance. There's always something rising up to challenge them. This is never an issue of generosity as a core value for you. If the generous giving of your time, talent, and resources is already a priority, then you're just waiting to say yes. Trust me when I tell you that Georgiana is a generous church. It was fun. I saw Wendy Smith, the principal at Cambridge, and she was telling story after story of parents who received new shirts this week and children who received something new for the first time in their life and the amazement and the shock. And yes, it's right. We have already purchased and are giving the shirts away before we finish paying for them. Because after all, why would I live by sight and not in faith in you to do the right thing? So they're already distributed. Today, we'll get them paid for. But we live by faith, right? Georgiana is a vessel of love. As kids and teachers return to school this week, we will have blessed 3 high schools, 2 junior highs, and 2 elementary schools with a variety of tangible gifts of support. It's a statement we are making to the enemy that when our schools are under attack, that we are going to be standing behind them and with them. It's a tangible statement of what we believe about being a member of this community. The generosity of our God towards us is unprecedented. It's unmatched in history. He gives his unfailing love. He gives rest to the weary. He gives peace to the fearful. He gives joy when we are sad. He gives comfort to us when we're grieving. He gives us forgiveness when we're guilty. He gives us hope when we're filled with doubt. He gives us his son when we are trapped by the bonds of sin and death. God is beyond charitable. God is not charitable. God is generous.